The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now back in session. Judge Johnson presiding.
Good morning, counsel, and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. This panel of the court has six cases on its agenda today, including three oral arguments. And the next oral argument is the third and final oral argument of the day. The case is A22-1110. Cami Lynn Ohm versus Commissioner of Public Safety. As you know, each of you will have 15 minutes for your principal argument, and then appellant's counsel will have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal. You should be able to see the time clock on your screen if you have the gallery view or some other such view. Counsel for appellant, you may begin by introducing yourself and your client, and then you may begin your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, judges. My name is Jay Adkins. I represent the appellant in this matter, Cami Lynn Ohm. May it please the court and counsel. This is a tough case for my client, Your Honors. I acknowledge that in my brief, my client is calling foul here. And that is what this case is about. This is a case about my client calling foul, arguing that the justice system has failed her. Now, on what basis do I make this claim? This is a case where everything that was created contemporaneous to the stop, which was ultimately a DWI stop, said the officer pulled over my client for one reason and one reason only, a claim of evasive and suspicious driving. And as a brief aside, it was ultimately determined that the driving conduct was not sufficiently evasive and suspicious. This reason for the stop was not only said by the officer at the scene to the folks that were there, and this is coming from his own testimony, but he also put it in his peace officer certificate. The certificate that he created just minutes after the DMT test, evasive suspicious driving. It also makes sense with the travel route that was attended. The officer was not following the OHM vehicle and only got behind the OHM vehicle to pull it over when it saw it on a road that could have led it back to the highway the OHM vehicle had just turned off of. And that illustration was inserted in the brief to help illustrate this point. It wasn't until 4 days later that the officer wrote a citation in his police report. And in that report, a new claim arose. Now the officer claims that he saw a lane violation and a wide turn well before these incidents occurred back on Highway 42, back when it was just him and the OHM vehicle by themselves, about two car lengths distance. The officer claims, now I saw a lane violation for 20 yards. I observed a lane violation straddling the line for 20 yards and a wide turn onto Third Street that was very dangerous in his estimation. This new claim was ultimately credited by the district court.
Well, let me ask you this, Mr. Atkins. Is it really a new claim? I mean, he testified that he told your client and her husband of the lane violation and the wide turn at the scene of the stop. They both admitted to being intoxicated. The wife had to, or your client had to, calm her husband down, and she admitted that. And the judge made credibility determinations. It sounds like you're asking us to reweigh the evidence. And that's really not what we do as a court of appeals. And there seems to be record support for the court's credibility determinations. How do you get beyond that?
Well, Your Honor, I think your question raises two very good points. Yes, this is a clearly erroneous standard. And we present that here as there is no other alternative to raise this issue. But as the Supreme Court has noted, this is not an abject review. This court is not powerless to look at a case. And if your judges, through a thorough review of the record, are left with a firm and definite conviction that a mistake was made, it is within your power and within the justice system to reverse that finding. And we think that meets the standards here. Now, your first part of your question raised, well, what about this distinction? And I think that's very important to point out. So the response we have gotten has been, when the officer said, I never mentioned a lane violation and I never mentioned a turn and I only mentioned evasive driving, I was referring to later when I was talking to Cammie's husband and the two other relatives that arrived on scene afterwards. One, this is factually incompatible with his original testimony. Your Honor, I'll point out to you that it was not until rebuttal that the officer made this claim that he ever mentioned a lane turn or violation or a wide turn violation. And two, in his direct, and we have the citations, and I'm certainly happy to provide them, the deputy said that when he said the reason for the stop was evasive driving, he was talking specifically to Mr. Jason Ohm, the husband and the occupant of the vehicle. And then when he asked about the other Ohms, he said, quote, I told them the same thing, page 25, lines 2 and 7. It is not until rebuttal that the deputy retook the stand and said, you know what, I actually told him different things. I told the occupants of the vehicle it was the lane turn violation, but then when I was confronted later, I gave this new false reason for the stop. So I think that in looking at the change of the story and looking closely at what was said on direct and then what was said on rebuttal after watching the other witnesses testify, we need to see that those don't match. Additionally, Your Honor, there's a new inconsistency in the change story. And I do stand by describing it as a change story, Your Honor, in that he said, I was speaking to Jason when I said the lane violation. I was specifically responding to Jason's questions. Maybe he didn't understand me due to his impairment. That's on page 80 of the transcript. But then just on one page later, 81, he was asked, so when you first mentioned the lane violation, who were you speaking to? He was speaking to Cammie. In one page, he went from, I made this claim contemporaneously, although not mentioning it on direct, but I made it to Jason Ohm in response to his questions, to, no, actually, I was talking to Cammie Ohm. Yet another inconsistency. Now, Your Honor, if I were just here with conflicting testimony, you're not going to meet the standard here of clearly erroneous. I'll acknowledge that. I'm trying to approach this as honest as I can. But when we look at the record as a whole, Your Honor, and the three things that I think are very important are not only the testimony that if you look at it, it's all over the place and inconsistent with itself and changing, what he put in his own peace officer certificate. He put evasive suspicious driving. And when asked, well, why didn't you put the real reason? He said he, quote, didn't feel that he needed to. And that citation is provided in the brief as well. He also testified on page 16, lines 19 through 21, that the stop wasn't based on suspicious driving. So that is him saying what I wrote in the peace officer certificate is false. I wrote something that is wrong. That's not the reason I pulled them over. And I think this court is going to have a difficult time looking at that. How do we evaluate that when he had a chance to put a contemporaneous statement? The contemporaneous statement matches everything else he said, including things that he admitted that he said, but then we're going to allow a different reason to come into play. And I think it also raises the question of what officer would put out a false reason? Is it even reasonable to say that a cop, when asked, hey, why'd you pull over my wife? I'm going to give that person a false reason, and I'm going to stick by that false reason, and I'm going to include that false reason in my peace officer's certificate, but it's not the real reason. I've got this other real reason that is added 4 days later. And we also know, via the officer's own testimony, that when he made this new claim, he knew there was no squad video. He knew it was going to be his word versus hers. In looking at that, it is not an argument that I make lightly, judges. I understand what I'm asking this court to do as it relates to an officer's testimony. But we have a situation where everything this officer said and did, especially those things contemporaneous with the stop, said the reason for the stop was evasive and suspicious driving. Then makes a new claim of a traffic violation that happened well before, and it was given essentially a blanket level of credibility that credits it. And on review of the case law and the clearly erroneous standard, this court is not powerless to fix a clear and definite wrong. And I think it's helpful for this court to think, what must this court believe? If we're going to believe the officer's testimony, to credit that testimony, That means we would have to believe that the officer was behind a vehicle at bar close, that that vehicle straddled the line for 20 yards, then immediately thereafter made an illegal wide turn. Yet the officer did not initiate a stop or even follow the vehicle. It kept straight initiated.
I just want to ask you to comment on some specific parts of the district court's decision, because I am struggling with the same thing that Judge Flory mentioned, is sort of and I appreciate your candor, that you know that you're making a difficult argument, and I'm ready to listen to it. So the district court said, on the point that you're making, you know, how credible is it that the officer would have observed a lane violation and not acted on it? The district court did evaluate that and gave it some thought. On pages, I think it's 7 through 8, the district court's decision, that the court is persuaded that the officer did observe a lane violation and a wide turn. The court finds that it is reasonable that the officer had to take a moment to process the driving violations before he determined that it was necessary to stop the vehicle. So I guess, to me, it's not just that you're asking us to look at these contradictions in the record or the conflicting testimony and statements of the officer. You are, of course you are. And that was what was asked of the district court. And the district court did that weighing and credibility analysis and made the comments it did. So you're actually asking us to go yet another step and reject that careful analysis. So would you help me understand where it would be our role to do that? Thank you.
Yes, under the clearly erroneous standard. If we were looking once again solely at the traffic travel route, I don't think we'd get there. What I'm asking this court to do, and when we apply the clearly erroneous standard, we review the record in the whole, and we provided some case law that on the argument that just because there's some fact that the court could point to does not prevent this court from taking a holistic view of all of the entire record and determine if there's a firm and definite conviction a mistake has been made. And not only, Your Honor, do all the things that I've raised, the peace officer certificate, the travel route, and the current contemporaneous statements by the officer, not only are they inconsistent with the new claim of a lane and turn violation, they're perfectly consistent with a stop based off a claim of evasive and suspicious driving. Every single one of them, not only inconsistent, but consistent with the real reason that the officer gave that morning, it was early hours, and that he put in his peace officer certificate. And so I'm asking this court to look at the record in a whole and ask itself, are you left with the firm and definite conviction that a mistake was made here?
But and I think that in determining credibility, though, we often mention and look at, and as a former district court judge, I've done this many times, and I'm sure you've seen it in the courtroom, it's not just what is said, it's how it's said. It's the circumstances of the evidence. It's the judge's ability to observe the witnesses. Isn't that a factor that we also have to take into consideration in judging whether we come to a definite and firm conclusion that a mistake was made here? We're looking at the hard, cold record, whereas that judge actually saw the people in the courtroom and could use those observations to make his credibility determinations.
Your Honor, I would have two responses to that. First, yes, that is absolutely a factor that this court can look at. But you do have the record to look at and see the clearly changing story. I think through a thorough review of the facts and presented this case, Your honors will look at that and say, I see what happened here. And I once again, don't go here lightly, but I think the evidence is clear. The reason for the stop, as supported by the three things we've shown, was a claim of evasive and suspicious driving, turning off on a highway, and now you're on a road that actually meets back up with that highway. The cop got behind that vehicle, and then that vehicle went straight through. It did not turn back on the highway, went straight through to the east side of 2nd Street. And that's where the stop happened. And it wasn't until 4 days later that that new claim is made. And a problem with the district court order is that it even points out this calls the officer's credibility into question, but on the whole, the court finds him credible. And I do think that that is concerning, that a blanket label of credibility being applied creates a situation where no one's constitutional rights are really there. This is a small town, a one county judge. It is a very difficult position to be in. I acknowledge that, and he was there. But to simply give it a blanket credibility, and there was no cite to the record by the district court judge of here's something that rehabilitated the inconsistencies. Here's something that fixed it. Or here's something that showed me he was true. He just gave a blanket credibility. And if that is beyond review of this court, then frankly, I think the constitutional rights of all of our citizens in this state is diminished. Because if all it takes is a cop to change his story and get a district court to give a blanket label of credibility, and if that's not reviewable, I think that goes beyond the intention of the Fourth Amendment and the case law. So with that in mind,
I have said one question about the record. You've mentioned a couple of times about when the report was drafted. Is there support in the record for when it was drafted? Because I couldn't find that.
Yes, Your Honor. The report, and we had to deal with the cop a couple times, but on page 27, lines 13 through 18, page 19, lines 9 through 21, I went through with him that the report was, the citation was dated December 2nd, and the police report mentions in the past tense, I created the citation and mailed it to Ms. Ohm. So it took a few times for the officer to finally agree, but he eventually did. That means he wrote his report no sooner than December 2nd. And he also testified that he did not write his report in parts, meaning he wrote it all at once. So that's the where that comes from. And those are the pages. I can provide them again if you'd like.
Thank you.
With that in mind, I once again ask this court to give this case a thorough review and to search to see if you are left with that firm and definite conviction that a mistake was made. And I thank you for your time.
Mr. Atkins, I have a question about your second argument, which has to do with the certificate. I mean, do you agree that for purposes of that argument, we're not limited to the certificate? We can review all the evidence in the record about whether or not probable cause exists. In other words, the certificate is just one piece of evidence included in the record, and that, you know, if it's the district judge's prerogative to consider that one piece of evidence in the context of the whole record?
Yes. I want to clarify because we're talking about argument two. I mean, in argument one, as it relates to the stop, it's a very important piece of evidence that this court should look at, a contemporaneous statement from the officer to the commissioner to revoke. As it relates to the second argument, which is that a pre-hearing, pre-conviction loss of license must be thrown out because it was triggered by a false certificate, I think the court has to look at the certificate. The only reason the license is revoked before being convicted or given a hearing is a peace officer's certificate was sent to the Commissioner of Public Safety. It requires him to certify certain facts. In there, he certified the reason for the stop was evasive, suspicious driving. And later, when his story changed, he testified, quote, that was not the quote, the stop wasn't based on the suspicious driving activity, end quote. That's on page 16, lines 19 through 21. So he explicitly said, what I certified to the commissioner is false, and I think that is relevant and the only thing to look at on issue two.
Okay, thank you. Counsel for respondent, you may introduce yourself and your client and begin your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Rebecca Webster and I represent respondent. We're asking you today to affirm the district court's order. The determination that this court needs to make is whether the district court was clearly erroneous in its factual findings. As appellant noted, it's high standard because the reviewing court doesn't sit as fact finders. Your determination is based on whether the district court had reasonable evidence in its record to make the findings that it did. And appellant points to three areas where he argues that the district court was deficient. And that's the inconsistent testimony and the testimony of the three other witnesses, the travel route, and the peace officer certificate. So regarding the testimony of the deputy, it did not change between cross and rebuttal. What happened was deputy testified that he was confused about the earlier questions he had on cross and then clarified those on rebuttal. And he specifically said that in his testimony and then definitively testified that he told appellant and her husband, Jason Ohm, that the reason for the stop was a lane line violation. And then later, after appellant was arrested, said the reason for the stop was evasive driving to Jason Ohm and two of appellant's relatives, Taylor and Carson Ohm. So I think if you look at the context of pages 24 and 25 of the transcript, I think it's pretty clear that the deputy was confused about some of the language that was used, and that's why he clarified that on rebuttal. So again, there was ample evidence for the district court to find that the deputy was credible and his testimony didn't change. As far as the testimony of the three other witnesses, first, the number of witnesses alone does not establish the weight of evidence. Georgopoulos tells us that the testimony of one witness can be the basis for a factual finding. And then second, the district court made specific credibility determinations about the testimony of Jason Ohm and appellant. The district court found that both appellant and Jason Ohm had been under the influence and that contributed to them misremembering what was said to them. And that's supported by the transcript. Jason Ohm agreed that he didn't remember everything that was said and that he had been drinking. And appellant also admitted that she had been drinking. And further, the district court found that Jason Ohm was argumentative and that might have contributed to him misremembering. And that's supported by the deputy's testimony that he was argumentative, Jason Ohm's own testimony that I believe he said he was upset or frustrated, and appellant's own testimony that echoed the same. Regarding the travel route, the district court determined that it actually supported the reason for the stop. As appellant noted, the deputy was traveling about two car lengths behind appellant's vehicle, and he noticed the lane line violation and appellant took the wide turn. And he testified that that happened too quickly for him to process, and the district court credited that testimony. And also noted that because the deputy took the next available left turn to follow on a road that was parallel to appellant, that also supported the basis for the stop. And then finally, regarding the peace officer certificate, the appellant basically argues that the peace officer certificate goes to the deputy's credibility because it contains allegedly false information. First, I would argue that it's not false information. The deputy testified and the district court found that part of the reason for the stop was evasive driving. However, the district court ultimately determined that that wasn't enough to satisfy a reasonable articulable suspicion. But at the time, the deputy did believe that part of the stop was based on evasive driving. So it's not false, it's just not all the reasons for the stop. Second, the deputy testified that not including the lane line and wide turn was merely an omission, and the district court noted that in its order and credited that testimony. And the district court went further on to say that the wide turn might have been part and parcel with the evasive driving. So that also might be why it wasn't included. The district court noted that it took the peace officer certificate into account when it made its determinations, but ultimately found that the deputy was credible.
Ms. Webster, so I'm the second argument that appellant has made about the certificate, it's based on a statute, 169A.52 subdivision 4A, which begins by saying, upon certification by the peace officer that there existed probable cause, and so on. So, did this certificate state facts that would support probable cause?
Yes, Your Honor. First of all, that argument wasn't brought up at district court, so therefore it's not properly before you. However, as you noted, the statute dictates that a peace officer is certifying probable cause for arrest and also for that the alcohol test was above a 0.08 or there was a refusal. And there's no factual record or question for the district before the district court about whether there was or was not probable cause, because that wasn't an issue presented to them. And as far as the peace officer certificate containing allegedly false information about the basis for the stop, that's not something that the peace officer is certifying to the commissioner. The officer is only certifying probable cause and the alcohol level. If there are no further questions from your honors, then I'll close by asking you to affirm the district court's order. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Webster. Mr. Adkins, you have an opportunity for rebuttal.
I'm going to address a couple of the specific items mentioned before I wish to close on a holistic picture. Number one, nothing in my argument asks you to credit the witnesses presented by petitioner. I've not argued that in the brief, and I've not argued that here. I've not implied that this court must accept their testimony. That's not the case. That is not your role. Your role is to look at what the court did credit and what the court ignored, and determine if whether or not you are left with that firm and definite conviction a mistake was made. Now, on the issue of the changing testimony, this court should not be fooled by what's being attempted. And the key here is Jason Ohm, the front seat passenger. As I mentioned before, in his direct examination, originally, the deputy said he told Jason Ohm the reason for the stop was evasive driving. Then when he talked to the two citizens that came on scene, he, quote, told them the same thing. There was no mention of, I told the occupants the real reason and I gave everyone else a false reason. That never came up. And now all of a sudden, on rebuttal, it's I told Cammy and Jason one thing and I told Taylor and Carson another. And of course, that still leaves the question of why on earth would you give a false reason for a stop? Now, the state is tempted to make an argument that, well, it was one of the reasons. That's not what was testified to. Once again, page 16, lines 19 through 21, he agreed when asked, quote, the stop wasn't based on the suspicious driving activity, end quote. What was just argued is false. He absolutely agreed that that is not the reason he pulled him over. Once again, to the contrary of everything he said contemporaneously. I ask this court to look closely at this evidence. I understand I'm asking you a lot. It is a difficult position to be in, but I ask you to consider this from the point of view of a civilian. Imagine being told, I pulled you over for one reason. Everything you were given you get a copy of your peace officer certificate and the notice of revocation, says evasive suspicious driving. And it's not until you get charged and your attorney requests a copy of the police report that a new claim comes out that there was a traffic violation that occurred for 20 yards that he now claims. And you can't prove a negative. And it's your word versus the officer's. Now, that alone might not get us to clearly erroneous, but when that new claim is inconsistent with all the objective evidence on the record, Your Honors, I submit that that does meet that standard. And I ask that you reverse the finding of fact and correct a wrong. Thank you.
One question, Mr. Atkins. This has come up a couple of times, and Judge Johnson's asked about it a couple of times. In reading the transcript, both lawyers were very specific as to the issue for the district court, and that was limited to the basis for the stop. So have you preserved your second issue for appeal here today?
And I think that's a great question, Judge. I meant to bring that up, and I'm remiss not to have. One, when I was asked the issues at the district court level, we did not know that the officer was going to completely testify that what he wrote was false, that wasn't the reason for the stop, what I just quoted you from page 16. That was completely unknown. And in the district court brief, there was a paragraph used and set aside for this and said, in light of this testimony, we are also arguing that at least if the implied consent case is concerned, remember this was a combined hearing, criminal and civil. As far as the implied consent case is concerned, this pre-hearing, pre-conviction loss of license was triggered by a false certificate as proven by the officer's own testimony. So we then argued it there through a paragraph where we did provide an argument saying the thing that triggered it was wrong and false. Therefore, the revocation can't stand under the implied consent law. So we did raise that, but I'll be frank with Your Honor. I had no idea the cop was going to say that. I was shocked when that was said. and we adjusted accordingly, and we raise it in our brief. I don't think someone with an implied consent has to go in with knowing the future of what might be said, especially when that story is a changing testimony. So I think, yes, on the onset, we did say the issue was a stop, but in light of the testimony, we raised this other issue and we did address it with the district court presenting argument.
Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, I thank you all for your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins, and thank you, Ms. Webster. The case is submitted. The court will issue its opinion within 90 days.